Hello. Welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver. I'm very happy to sit with you in meditation. We're going to sit together today for 10 minutes, as per usual, and we're going to start soon. So please take your seat, get settled, whether you're on a cushion on the floor with your legs crossed loosely in front of you, or in a chair or on your sofa, where whatever feels comfortable, and that also enables you to sit upright. So before we practice today, I want to sort of dial it way back, go back to the very beginning, not of this video, not of the Open Heart Project, not of your life, but kind of the spiritual path in the Buddhist view. It starts with, among other things, the Four Noble Truths. These were among the first teachings that the historic Buddha gave upon attainment of enlightenment. And we're going to go over the first one briefly today. But before we do, and you may have done this already like countless times, you may be like, yeah, Susan, I know what that truth is. You've already talked about it. But you know what, y'all? I'm going to talk about it again. And I've heard it. I've been taught the Four Noble Truths maybe a billion times. And every time I hear somebody explicate who knows what they're talking about on the Four Noble Truths, I learned something new. I hear something I hadn't heard before. So perhaps that will be the same for you, at least as much as I know what I'm talking about, which one never knows. So, however, before we talk about the Four Noble Truths, which you can Google right now, you can find it. You can find countless essays and teachings on the first noble truth, which is life is suffering, which doesn't sound so great. Wow, that's not the truth I was looking for exactly. The word in Sanskrit, or maybe it's Pali, is dukkha, transliterated as D-U-K-K-A-H. And I've heard that it means something more like unsatisfying, as opposed to, you know, the most intense suffering you can imagine, although, you know, that's part of life as well. Anyway, the point I want to make is that even though you can Google it, even though you can find countless teachings on it, on the first noble truth, kind of doesn't matter. What matters is, what does it mean to you in your real life? IRL. Buddhism IRL. I'm thinking about this because I just finished teaching an 8-week program called BURL, Buddhism in Real Life. And it was all about applying the teachings to your life in 2024, or whatever year it might happen to be when you watch this. And I'm very inspired by it. It was wonderful. I'm going to teach it again next year. So the first noble truth, life is suffering, because everything that arises also dissolves. So there is nothing to hold on to. That's scary. And we have gone, as you know, a species, very far out of our way to pretend that that's not true. And not just in our world and the structures that we build, but in our hearts and the way we the ways we relate to others and ourselves, as if I could get it right and then it would be fine and everything would stick and stay, and I will have, whatever, created a world for myself or people I love or the planet, whatever is your preference, that you can count on. And yeah, you can certainly create situations that you can count on, and those too will dissolve. So I will dissolve, you will dissolve, this video will dissolve, everything. I don't particularly care for that. I'll just be upfront with you. It's scary. So two little stories about the first noble truth in real life. And the first is that I was in a conversation yesterday with members of the Open Heart Project Sangha, the sort of membership group within the Open Heart Project. You are warmly invited to join. It would be so great to see you there. And every week we have a gathering with me. And one person said she's really struggling with impermanence. She doesn't know how to accept it. And when she tries, understandably, it feels bad. It creates a darkness. It's disturbing. And yeah, it is. All of that. So what do you do? Well, the first thing that I suggested is, well, if you can't accept impermanence, like really, you might, you know, intellectually believe in it, but when you don't abide as if it was true, you live your life as if it wasn't true, you know, that's what we're looking to shift. So when you can't accept impermanence, no problem. You're not going to accept it by going, you better accept that. Start by accepting that you can't accept it. Then you're bringing some form of acceptance into the picture, and perhaps something will develop from that. So these are difficult truths, I would say. However, it is also said that when you abide in the truth, there's a sense of joy, relief, fullness. So we went on to discuss in this Sangha group what it was like to be with someone who was dying. And if you've ever been with someone who's dying, then you'll have your own version of this. But in my own experience, and in the case of these people, there was a sense that everything non-essential fell away when you were in this experience with someone else. It didn't matter how much money you had. Didn't matter if your relationships were good or bad. Didn't matter if you got the degree that you were hoping to get. Those things remain important, of course. But their true importance recedes, and a different kind of importance arises. The importance of being present with the truth and with this other person who's going through this profound experience. So anyway, I don't want to ramble here. What I noticed when I was listening to these two people telling their stories and then reflecting on my own story is that when we were accompanying someone in this profound moment of dying, but it could also have been being born. So let's just say birth and dying, like the ultimate realities. One weird component of that is self-doubt and self-criticism fall away completely. Most of us, myself included, walk around all day going, you didn't do that good. You're not good enough. If only this, if only that. All of that disappears when you're standing in these truthful moments of impermanence. And there's a sense of fullness within oneself. So if you have any interest in accepting impermanence, first, again, you could start by accepting that you can't accept it. That's cool. You're in the ballpark. And second, you could note such moments of fullness as they appear in your life, regularly, irregularly, frequently, infrequently. There are moments where you feel at ease, where you feel full, where you feel complete, no matter how fleeting. And for you and me, we could start on our journey of acceptance with the idea that the result of such acceptance could be living in with fullness and a sense of being complete as human beings. That would be great. So the last little anecdote I want to tell, and then we'll go to our practice, is, and I might have told this story already, I hope not, or I hope that if you heard it, you like hearing it again. I'm in Austin, Texas right now, which is really great for me. I love being here. And one of the reasons I love it is I go swimming every morning at this beautiful pool called Barton Springs. It's 3 acres long, It's a spring-fed pool. It's incredible. The water is always like 68 degrees. And there's something beauteous about that water. When I go, it's usually like 6 in the morning, 5:30, somewhere between 5:30 and 6:30. So here it's still dark, at least in some parts of the year. So swimming in the dark, it's so great. I love it. However, in this one experience, I was swimming and I was like, hey, wait a minute. That person I love is going to die. Well, let me check with all the other people I love. Oh yeah, that person, this one, that one, maybe I'll be last, but I'm going to die too. I started freaking out, just imagining the loss of each person who I love. Like, oh, what am I going to do? I'm supposed to be a Buddhist lady. What? I can't, I don't like this. I want to get away from it. And in that moment, I inhaled a little bit of water. And so I, you know, I started coughing. I was fine. But all of my thoughts dissipated, of course, because I had swallowed water. I breathed in a little bit of water. And so then I continued my swim and I thought, okay, maybe the lesson here is when I start freaking out about the things, to focus on what I'm doing, to be in my body. I haven't left it yet. To be in my body, doing what I'm doing, and repeat. So this is my way of framing the First Noble Truth IRL in real life. I hope it's useful. And again, if this is interesting, or next year early, I'm going to teach Buddhism in real life again. It's an online 8-week program that would be so great if you were there. Okay, let's sit. Oh, please begin your practice by letting go. Which for us means relax. Let go of whatever you're thinking. Let go of whatever you're anticipating or regretting. Let go of your to-do list. And just be here. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. Let yourself feel heavy and weighted from the waist down, rooted, and light and bright and receptive from the waist up. Feel the strength of your back body supports you. And let your front body be soft. The belly can relax. The area around the heart. The throat. Three gates: intuition, emotion, speech. They're always open. Don't know who designed it that way, but we can relax with that sense of openness. Mouth is closed. The lips and teeth can be slightly parted. And let the jaw relax and the tongue. Breath is natural in and out through the nose, unless you have a cold. So no breathing technique, just normal breathing. The eyes are open and the gaze is soft and cast down to a comfortable spot in front. You're not looking straight down or straight up, just in between? And let the brow relax. Feel your body breathing rather than notice, feel the inhale, the exhale. Let your mind be as it is. Thoughts come and go. Period. Just let them. If you notice, though, that you become absorbed in thought completely, not any little thought, but you spaced out, that's a good thing to notice because you're not meditating anymore. So notice that. Label it thinking. Let go. Come back and begin again, feeling the body breathe, aka meditating. So we'll sit together in silence for a few minutes until you hear the bell. thank you so much for your practice. Before I sign off, I want to invite you to join the Open Heart Project Sangha. I mentioned it earlier in this video. And the reason I think it's so important is because for the path that you're on, it's important not to do it alone, but to feel held in some way by a collective of people also seeking whatever they are seeking. And it's up to you whether you want to be held close or at a distance. Everybody participates in their own way, and that's fine. But to know that you are accompanied is potent and important. But come on over. Thank you for your practice. Thank you for practicing with me. Thank you for practicing together. See you next week.